Alrighty friends, welcome back to another episode of Law Schoolers. In this episode, we are talking about civil procedure, and we are going to be focusing on brief searches. So this is a continuation of our discussion about, well, I guess brief searches and seizures, and now we are talking about searches. In our last episode, we talked about stops, which is a type of seizure, and we are going to be focusing most of our discussion on frisks, the scope of frisks, and then also administrative stops and searches. And that's where this episode will leave off with. But let's go ahead and talk about frisks. Our biggest case here was Terry versus Ohio. This is where the definition of frisks really comes from. You've got a Terry frisk. So in this case, the defendant, Terry, argued that a frisk should actually, or at least a search based off of a stop should be resolved based off of probable cause, which means you need a warrant in order to do any kind of search. But the state is saying in this case that being an officer is a dangerous job, and if there's reasonable suspicion of a weapon, well, then they should be able to conduct a search to remove that weapon. Those are really the two biggest arguments that are being made. What the court ultimately decides is that in this case, a Terry search was reasonable, and reasonableness is going to be your standard instead of probable cause when determining whether or not this search, this type of search in particular, is going to be authorized by the Fourth Amendment. So, what is the standard? A frisk can occur only if there is reasonable suspicion for the stop plus a reasonable suspicion that a weapon is present. The scope of the search is going to be limited to only those places where that weapon might potentially be located. So in this particular case, what happened is that an officer observed Terry going into a store, assumed that there was a robbery going on, stopped Terry and patted Terry down and discovered, actually I'm not sure if they discovered a weapon there or not, but the officer believed that there was a weapon there just by nature of the type of robbery that was going on. So in this type of case, there was a reasonable suspicion for the stop just based off of the officer's experience and the behavior of Terry in the situation. And there was reasonable suspicion of a weapon just based off of how this crime typically involves a weapon. And the search that was actually conducted was only limited to Terry's outer clothing, and any intrusive search was only to remove a weapon that was present. So, in other words, this was a reasonable search, and that's why you get a Terry frisk. The dissent argues in this case that the standard should be probable cause, because a lot of the time officers have a lot of discretion, and they shouldn't have that type of discussion. And instead, that discretion is supposed to be based off of judicial or a constitutional amendment should be there as well. The decision in Terry does make sense, though, because I'll say that there's three reasons why it makes sense. First, it's tied to the practical reality of police. I mean, police just need to know how to search and protect themselves. The other rule-making bodies could influence police actions, so there is still the freedom of the legislature to say, hey, this is how you're supposed to conduct a search, it's got to be done by this standard, whatever it might be. But the Fourth Amendment allows reasonable suspicion and reasonable suspicion of a weapon. And the third reason is police need to fight crime safely. This kind of goes hand in hand with the first reason, and that is it's a practical reality that police officers are putting themselves in danger, and they need to be able to handle those situations without any fear of any potential injury to themselves. So what is the scope of a Terry frisk? Well, this is outlined in Commonwealth versus Wilson, and using the rule, there is, in this situation, in this case, there was reasonable suspicion for a stop. And this was because there was a call regarding a crime that was made. And the scene in this situation fit the description. So what happened in this situation? Well, the officers had gotten a call saying that a group of individuals were gathered outside of a store, and the officers responded to the call. They discovered that this group of individuals was outside the store, and there was also reasonable suspicion for a weapon here because the call described the use of a weapon and that the defendant had put that weapon inside the belt. And as the officers approached the scene, the defendant had put his hand on his hip. So the officers had reasonable suspicion that there was a weapon present. So in this jurisdiction, Commonwealth versus Wilson is not a federal case, but in this jurisdiction, a Terry frisk, the scope of the search is not exceeded if during a lawful pat frisk, it is immediately apparent to the police officer in light of the officer's training and experience that a concealed item is contraband. This is called the plain field doctrine. It's kind of similar to what we were talking about in brief searches and seizures previously, where the officers might discover something in plain view. This is the very similar kind of doctrine where it's a plain fill. If you're lawfully allowed to conduct a search, well, then if anything else becomes readily apparent, this plain fill doctrine will apply. So, in this situation, this was a lawful frisk to stop Wilson, to pat him down, and they found a contraband on his person. It was not a weapon, but it was contraband, illegal material. So, discovery of this was within the scope because the officers could tell right away that this specifically what this contraband was. Frisk search can also expand to backpacks and purses. States are going to differ about what the scope is. The scope may only extend for weapons. Arkansas is a good example of that. But it can also be expanded to a certain amount just based off of what the statutes might end up saying. If the officer, however, is conducting a search for an item other than a weapon, they are going to require a warrant or they need probable cause to conduct that search. There are different rules for vehicles, and I kind of want to outline those briefly. Under MIMS, an officer can ask the driver to exit without any additional suspicion, but a frisk of that officer requires reasonable suspicion about the presence of a weapon being there. So again, as far as that rule goes, officers can ask people to step out, but you still need to have reasonable suspicion about a weapon to conduct any pat search. Under Long, if there is reasonable suspicion of a weapon in the car, the officer can search the places where the weapon is expected to be located, and it needs to be within the reach of the driver. This rule in certain cases is expanded to passengers as well. That's going to be Johnson and Wilson that outlines those. And then this also assumes that there is reasonable suspicion for the stop. You can't have a reasonable, if you don't have reasonable suspicion for the stop, well then you can't ask the driver to exit, you can't conduct a frisk or a brief search of the vehicles. Even if there is a reasonable suspicion after you have that stop, you need to have that first step, reasonable suspicion for the stop, and then the other things can happen if you have reasonable suspicion of a weapon. Okay, let's talk about administrative stops and searches. An administrative stop is where an officer makes a random stop for a general administrative purpose. A good example of this is the general purpose is highway safety. Ensuring that drivers are licensed and that they're not impaired driving as well. To make an administrative stop, there is no need to show reasonable suspicion to actually make those stops. Our case here is City of Indianapolis versus Edmond. This is a really interesting case. What ended up happening here is that the officers had set up a barrier conducting a random stop. They were looking, but the interesting thing is that they had targeted a neighborhood that was well known for drug use, and they were hoping to mitigate the drug use of the neighborhood. Well, this is more than an administrative stop. This is something that is called a investigative stop, and you can't do that. So here's our rule based off of the case. Administrative stops don't need to have a reasonable basis as long as they are not discretionary, meaning they need to be random, and they have a general administrative purpose, and they are limited in duration. So again, that's going to be license and registration checks, making sure that you're not that people aren't driving illegally is true there too, but the purpose is for highway safety rather than crime investigation or fighting. And so we have several other cases that kind of illustrate this purpose. You have SITS, which says that a sobriety stop is okay. You have Prowse, which says license checks are fine, but you can't have discretionary stops, meaning you can't target specific neighborhoods. It has to be random. This case is also different from Wren, because Wren is looking for crimes, which requires a reasonable basis for the stop. In this particular case, the event in Indianapolis versus Edmond, there was no reasonable basis for the stop. They were doing random stops. So by nature of it being random, you obviously don't have any reasonable basis. Also do want to note as well that if you are conducting a stop, if the officers are conducting a stop, dog sniffs around the outside of the vehicle, the exterior of the vehicle, as not considered a search, as long as it does not extend the duration of the stop. There is an exception to this rule of administrative stops. It says that if there are non-conforming roadblocks, meaning you're doing it not for, say, highway safety, but instead you're doing it for crime investigation purposes, well, then these are fine as long as there is an exigent circumstance. So if you're doing a roadblock and stopping random people to discover an escaped felon, or if there's a terrorist attack, well, then you can have a roadblock that is non-conforming and not necessarily, by that I mean it's not an administrative stop to find that escaped felon or to catch the potential terrorist. So that's basically our standard. We've got brief searches, and specifically we have frisks, a Terry frisk. That is going to be if you have reasonable suspicion for the stop. And then if you have reasonable suspicion for a weapon, that is going to be a Terry frisk is going to be justified, and that needs to be limited to the places where a weapon is located. We also talked about some of the rules when it comes to vehicles in that scope. Officers can ask drivers to exit without any additional suspicion, but you still need to have reasonable suspicion for a weapon before conducting any search. You have to search only those places where a weapon might be located. And of course, you need to have that reasonable suspicion for the stop in the first place. And then we talked about administrative stops and searches. These are going to be stops and searches that can be random and for a general purpose, general administrative purpose, such as highway safety. And that is everything that I've got to cover as far as all this material goes. Well, thank you for your time. And in our next episode, we're going to be moving on to a different topic. We have been talking about brief searches. Next episode, we will be focusing on full searches and seizures, which means that we will be spending a significant amount of time talking about warrants. Thank you again. Have a good one. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join Law Schoolers Pro. And you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't are pre-law materials. And the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice. And with that, the fourth thing is if it is used as legal advice, We are not liable, that is, law scholars is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.